this occasion. Morning. Oh, that feels a bit high. We go there? All right. So, kids, did you hear what Tricia just said? Yeah? So you're going to be using this time to come up with some more pages for that book of different types of quiet. We might even ask you to show us later. Yeah? No, I'm getting a thumbs down from the back corner at that point. Okay, so today we're going to talk about Sabbath. Hopefully get some understanding of the history of the Jewish Sabbath and Christian traditions, and maybe raise some questions about how Sabbath might be relevant now. Sabbath enters the Jewish tradition at the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments literally translates as the Ten Words, the Decalogue. In Godly Play, it talks about them as the ten best ways to live, which I really love as a way of expressing the intent. And they're given in the Bible twice. They're given in Exodus, when the people have just come out of Egypt across the Red Sea, and Moses goes up Mount Sinai, and the covenant between Israel and Yahweh is established, including the law. And then the commandments are given again in Deuteronomy, which is the other end of the wandering in the desert after 40 years, when they're on the verge of entering into the land of Canaan, and Moses, who doesn't go into Canaan with them, gives a big last speech, and he reminds them of their whole story of being saved from Egypt, and he reminds them of the law that is part of the covenant that Yahweh made with them. So if you're not up for a sermon today, my imaginative invitation is for you to imagine those people of Israel at either end of their sojourn in the desert. Maybe they're at the just beginning end. They've just escaped from Egypt, and they have both the fresh excitement of that wild escape and also perhaps the fear of life outside Egypt, life without the structure of what they knew. Or perhaps they're at the other end. Perhaps they're very tired after 40 years in the desert. Or perhaps they're standing longingly on the cusp of this new thing. Which end of the journey feels more like you today? And whichever it is, be in that place with the people of Israel and listen to Moses speaking the words of the covenant and the command to you. Or you can listen to me tell you about the history of the Sabbath. So the two versions of the Sabbath command, which we read together, are, as you could see, nearly identical. And the Sabbath in both editions of the Ten Commandments is the bridge commandment between the commandments about your relationship with Yahweh and the commandments about relationship with other people. And the Sabbath is a kind of both. But the reasons given for the Sabbath are quite different in the two texts. So in Exodus, the reason given for the Sabbath is that God observed Sabbath at creation, and therefore God's people are to observe Sabbath. Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which just means cease, desist, rest, means stop, essentially. So the commandment in Exodus comes, they escape through the Red Sea, and then very soon after that they have the story of manna. So as they're setting out into the desert, this miraculous food appears in the morning every day, and they're told to gather up just enough for one day, and some of them gather more than enough for one day, and the excess goes mouldy and full of maggots, was a lovely translation I found this week. The word manna is actually literally translates as what is it? So they call it what is it? And they're told to only gather enough, except on the sixth day when they're to gather enough for 2 days, so that on the seventh day nobody gathers. And the sixth day food doesn't go mouldy, because the instruction is that on the seventh you'll rest. Some people go out on the seventh day anyway to gather, and they find there is no manna on the seventh day. So this whole story revolves around trust. Trust that God will provide again the next day, and trust that if they rested, they would still have what they needed. And then four chapters later, we get the commandments on Mount Sinai, which I think is telling in a legal and covenant framework what's already been told as story. So the manna story is the mythological parable way of telling about the Sabbath commandment, and then it's given as a command on Mount Sinai. And this all relates to creation. Yahweh creates in abundance, and then Yahweh rests. And every day of the creation story, we're told that Yahweh looks at what Yahweh creates and says, "It is good, it is good, it is very good." Other creation stories from the ancient Near East tended to have a creation which was not good. It was often created as the result of conflict between the gods. In many of the ancient Near Eastern creation stories, a god would blow back the waters to defeat a tyrant, which is a very similar image to the parting of the Red Sea to defeat Pharaoh. So this is language of creation, the creation of the people of Israel. And then Yahweh rests. Yahweh rests in the creation story because Yahweh is not anxious about that creation. Yahweh is not anxious about any other god coming in to destroy what's been created. Yahweh is not anxious about creation getting off on its own agenda while God's not looking. God stops because God's work is complete. So Sabbath is not an absence of work. Sabbath is the fulfillment of work. It's a statement of, it is good, enough for now. And God doesn't desire God's people to be working non-stop to keep creation going, because God has created a system that is self-generating, perhaps even a system that lovingly set in place then evolves. The Sabbath rest is the pinnacle of creation, and it expresses the very nature of God. We do not need to be anxious because God has created a world so good that God can rest and enjoy it. And we are beings created as part of the abundance. We are not cogs in a slavish machine. So the Deuteronomy version of the Sabbath command emphasizes that we are not to be slaves. The core identity of the Hebrew people was that they had once been slaves and they were slaves no more, because Yahweh had bought them, and then rather than setting them to more work, Yahweh set them free. So they were not brought out of slavery to do God's work instead of Pharaoh's work. They were brought out of slavery to be free people. Under Pharaoh, the Hebrew people hadn't had a day off in 400 years. They were no longer humans. They were dispensable work units. In Exodus chapter 5, they ask for 3 days' leave to go into the desert to worship their God. And in Pharaoh, in response, says, "No, if you've got time to worship your God, you're being lazy. Therefore, now I'm not going to give you straw to make bricks anymore." They're brick making, that's their job. And they have been provided the straw to make bricks, and now they're told you still have to make the same amount of bricks, but you also have to find your own straw. So this is the system from which Yahweh rescues them. An endless cycle of work, endless production, that all benefits Pharaoh and not the workers. So this Sabbath contrasts the way of Pharaoh and the way of Yahweh, the way of constant work but shortage compared with a reliable provision for everybody. So the Sabbath is not actually instituted as a religious festival. It's a command relating to the social and economic practices of the community. And it's a command to protect the lives of the most vulnerable, the ones who worked on the command of others. And this is why it spells out in so much detail. That is the most detailed of all the commandments. It spells out everyone shall stop, the men and the women, your male slaves and your female slaves, your families and the foreigners. It even makes sure, you know, to stop the animals who might plough your fields, the ox and the donkey. The ones who are in power are called to rest, because if the one in power is working, a whole lot of other people need to also be working. It's like if a CEO goes into the office on a Saturday, just get a bit of paperwork done, but somebody needs to clean the office, someone needs to be running a power provision so that there's power coming, someone needs to be watching the generator, there probably needs to be someone in the coffee shop downstairs so they can go and get their lunch. One person's work brings everyone else into working. But it's also that the rest of some needs to not depend on the work of others. And for me, the command that's given, the way that passage in Mark is often translated is, the Sabbath was not made for man, man was made for the Sabbath. And I think very often men's rest has been facilitated by women's work. Preparing food, keeping a house clean, looking after children so someone can rest. I'm sure in this community we're very equal and nobody does that, but that is the tradition and the culture that we have come out of. So neither somebody's work includes everyone else in working, and somebody's rest needs to not rely on someone else's work. And this idea of a weekly Sabbath is also tied to the notions of the Sabbath year and the Jubilee year. So the Sabbath year is the seventh year, and the Jubilee year is the seventh in the cycle of seven, the 50th or 49th or the 50th year. And these are the times when the whole land is called to rest. In the Sabbath year, the debts were wiped, slaves were set free, and the fields were to be left fallow. And then in the Jubilee year, the ownership of the land was to return to the original family whose traditional land it was. Imagine if we had a Jubilee in Australia and returned the land to our traditional owners. All of these provisions intervened into the economic and social situation that could gradually get out of balance, and it set people back to rights, to their position as equal human beings. The community that these texts are written into is an agricultural community, and initially that would have been a subsistence agricultural community where people grow what they need for their own family. And then overlaid across that is a system of kings and invading armies and foreign powers who demand tribute. And once you add tribute into an agricultural system, you need to produce surplus. Now, for many subsistence farmers, the need to produce surplus pushed them to the edge. And so in order to meet their tribute requirements, their tax requirements, they would need to call on the others in their community to give them a loan. And the way the Jewish law was set up was that communities were called on to support each other. The wealthier in your community were to support the poorer when they come asking you for a loan. Of course, once one family is giving a loan, another family, if they couldn't repay the loan, it would turn into a bonded labour, that the family to whom the money was owed could call on the labour of the families who owed them money, which then leads to that poorer family never being able to produce a surplus because they are working on someone else's land to produce someone else's surplus. So the Sabbath year intervenes and says, we wipe that debt, everyone's back to zero, you've all got your equal chance now of producing your surplus with your own labour in your own space. So the Sabbath breaks the cycle of endless labour for someone else's gain. Now, it's not clear if they actually ever did the Sabbath year, but the Sabbath year they probably did. In fact, Orthodox Jews continue to observe the Sabbath year, and there's some fantastic legislation about what you can and can't do in the Sabbath year, and you can buy produce from Arab farmers, but you can't buy produce. You can there's something about hydroponics are okay, but open fields are not. It's really great. You've got to look it up. But it's very unlikely that they ever did the Jubilee, the 49th or the 50th year, where land title was returned. But whether or not they actually did it, that this is embedded in the covenant laws indicates that Yahweh does not want people to be enslaved to each other. They need to be free to celebrate the goodness of creation. God created enough for everyone, abundant enough. And God expects that abundance to be always available for everyone to enjoy. Take a moment to breathe in that affirmation of who God is. God does not want you to be enslaved. God has created a good, abundant world to enjoy. God wants all people to be as free and equal as you or I. Somewhere in the Hebrew history, and we don't really know where, that day of Sabbath rest became a day of worship. Certainly by the time of the prophets and the time of the exile into Babylon, it was observed as a worship day. A communal worship, people would come together. And then in the centuries between what we have as the Old and New Testament, the period called the Intertestamental Period, for those of you who love biblical history, the couple hundred years between, the Jewish religious leaders developed a large body of writings to explain how the covenant laws applied to lots of daily situations. This is sometimes called the Halakha or the Mishnah. And it became very legalistic. A long time ago, I studied law for a little while, and I couldn't understand why law, you get these long run-on clauses. You shouldn't do this, which includes this and this and this and this other thing and something else. And you'd look at it and go, why would anyone ever do any of those things? And then I ran a youth camp, where I told the kids they weren't allowed to leave the property overnight while I slept. And they didn't leave the property, but I found out the next day they'd been on the roof. And I realised that the legislation should say, you shall not leave the property, including going on the roof. And that's how legislation becomes legalistic and complicated. So by the time of Jesus, it was a complex and weighty set of religious laws. Now, Jesus doesn't appear to have broken the Sabbath as it's given in the Torah, but he probably did break the rules of the Sabbath that are in the Mishnah. Sabbath was intended to protect the vulnerable. So any Sabbath practice that oppressed the vulnerable was a breaking of the heart of the Sabbath. This is a reality check for me. Am I involved in any religious practice that actually increases the suffering of the vulnerable? The incident about the grain that we read relates to the Torah provisions for gleaning. Landholders were always to leave some grain for the poor to pick up. So Jesus and his disciples moved through the field not as landowners harvesting, which is against the Sabbath, but as poor people gleaning, which is permitted. In fact, gleaning is permitted in the Sabbath year. The poor are allowed to go and eat anything that just comes up in the year that it's not actively sown. The poor are allowed to go and eat. So the grain is part of the abundant goodness of creation for everyone. This is the first rationale for the Sabbath, the goodness of creation, and Jesus raises it. And then the man with the shriveled hand is the second reason for the Sabbath, that no one will be a slave, because a physical deformity trapped the man into either menial work or begging. And being in the position of a slave puts him in a place where even on the Sabbath he can't rest, because he doesn't have the capacity on 6 days to ensure that his family can eat on the seventh. So when Jesus returns his capacity to work, he returns his capacity to rest. So in these two paired stories, Jesus presents a call to return to the real reasons for the Sabbath, not a critique of the pedantry of how it's policed. Sabbath was a gift intended for good, especially good for the poor. It's meant to be a time of full stomachs, not the hunger of constantly working for not quite enough. It's meant to be a time of healed bodies, not the shriveled enslavement of an endless cycle of production and consumption. It expresses the essential nature of Yahweh, one who creates a good, abundant world, one who can be trusted to provide what is needed, not excess, but plenty. God provides plenty. One for whom every person is an individual human, not a cog in a machine. And every human deserves rest from labours. This is a God who desires the created world to be enjoyed, not just laboured through. So if Sabbath is so important, why don't Christians observe it? What traditions of observing the Sabbath do you carry with you today, or have you actively rejected from your tradition? I'm going to talk about how we got from the time of Jesus to where we are now. Maybe listen for where the things you carry fit in. The earliest disciples after Jesus' death and resurrection continued to observe the Jewish Sabbath because they were pious Jews. And they also gathered on the first day of the week to celebrate resurrection and to work through together what their experiences of Jesus meant. As the missionary churches emerged, increasingly there were Christians who were not Jewish, and so they didn't observe Sabbath. And in Paul's letters, we get scathing accounts of his opinion of people who tried to force new converts to observe Jewish laws. Especially in Galatians, he's absolutely livid that people are trying to convert the Gentile Christians to Sabbath practice, to Jewish practices, including Sabbath and circumcision. And yet, in Romans, he seems totally fine with some of the Roman Christians practicing Sabbath as one expression of the Roman community's faith. And Paul himself continued to be an observant Jew. Over time, the percentage of Jews in the community of Christians reduced, so there were fewer and fewer Christians observing Sabbath. Many were taking time off work on Sundays to attend some form of worship. Worship seems to have often been early in the morning or late in the evening, so people could come before or after work. The Ten Commandments became popular with Christians in the second century, but they seemed to just skip over the Sabbath one. In 321, Constantine declared Sunday to be a day off. At least it was a day of rest for commerce, so the markets were closed. It was a day of work of rest for civic officers, so all of government shut down. It was not a day of rest for agriculture, so it was not a universal day of rest. Sunday was a day sacred to the Roman sun god Sol, and it's likely that that was as much an influence on Constantine's decision as providing for Christian worship, because Constantine had been a Christian for maybe not quite 10 years at the time, and he continued to support a range of religious cults in the empire that he ran. Up until the late 300s, the end of the 4th century, church leaders acknowledged the value of recognising both a Saturday and a Sunday, because the Saturday was held to reflect creation and the Sunday resurrection. And increasingly the idea of the seventh day became one day in seven rather than specifically the seventh. It's the 7th century before Christian communities start talking about a requirement to take all of Sunday off work. And even longer before we get theologies that transfer the theology of Jewish Sabbath to Christian Sunday. It's Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century who first expresses this idea that the commandment given to Moses should be interpreted by Christians as a day of rest on Sunday. The logic is around the seventh day is the fulfillment of the old covenant, but the Sunday is the first day of a new covenant. So the Sunday, the new covenant, opens us into the beginning of God's eternal rest. It's the first day of a new creation, where the Sabbath was the last day of the old creation. Thomas Aquinas talks about this as spiritual rest and says you don't need to actually stop working. I have no idea what he means. Luther in the 16th century taught the Sabbath command as a general principle. To stop work regularly and study the Word of God was the principle of Sabbath. Calvin in the same period saw the Sabbath as a binding command on Christians that should be transferred to Sundays rather than Saturdays, kind of using Aquinas' logic. So Reformed traditions that lent heavily on Calvin's theology ended up with strict codes for what was or wasn't permitted on Sundays, and some of those included a restriction on entertainment and forms of recreation. So for many Christians since the Reformation, Sabbath has been seen as something that's no longer commanded, but it's still a wise and practical tradition to be observed in principle. It's a break in the cycle of work to pay attention to the rhythm of God. In Western culture, this has tended to be really individualistic and about personal piety. How would it look if we took seriously this wise and practical tradition to stop work as a call for human rights, for justice, and for dignity for all people? Because Sabbath is not about me. Sabbath is a gift to allow us to love God and love our neighbour. The basis for moving away from the commands, the Sabbath as a command, is tied up with the reasons for moving away from the whole Jewish law. Now, Christians did not give up Jewish law because Jewish were following it as slavish regulation to earn the favour of God. And we Christians don't do that anymore. Jewish law was essentially a boundary marker that allowed the Jews to know who they were and to know who their God was. Now, clearly some of them did get quite sidetracked in a million legalistic details. But the covenant between Moses and the Hebrew people still held. Until Jesus came and established a new covenant, a covenant of unbounded love and welcome. We are not party to the Mosaic covenant, but we are included in the new covenant. And this is a covenant that's not marked by religious ritual or obedience to moral practices, but it's marked by welcoming love and a kingdom where the last will be first. The same sort of love that underpins the original Sabbath command underpins the new covenant. A love that is abundant, that is always enough, that is for celebration and delight, and that sees every person as a fully beloved human, not an economic pawn. How do we live with that God of the Sabbath? I am not going to expand on that today. I'm going to do that next time I stand up to talk because it was just getting too big. But I want to leave you with that as a discernment question to mull over and pray through in the next weeks. How do you journey with a Sabbath God who upholds the rights of the poor worker and celebrates the goodness of creation for all? And how do we, Mount Hawthorne Community Church, as a gathered community, follow that God together? Plenty of time for questions today if you want questions.
Could you just repeat those?
The questions?
Could you just repeat those last two, three?
So how do we live with the God of the Sabbath? How do you journey with a Sabbath God who upholds the rights of the poor workers and celebrates the goodness of creation for all? How do we as a gathered community follow that God together? I can pop that on the email if that would help, Gail. Yeah.
Thank you, Claire. Lots of... Is that working?
Yeah, speaking right into it.
Thanks, Claire. That's given me lots to think about. But your final words made me think first of the fight that's going on at the moment between casual workers deregulating Saturday, Sunday, all that sort of thing. And for some time I have thought, I think the next generation won't even know what a weekend is, that we'll just work straight through. But then my next thought was, well, these things come from our Christian traditions, but our society is becoming less and less affected by its Christian traditions and more ruled by great God money. So then how do we live that way within a society that doesn't honour God and is more interested in money?
I think the ancient Hebrew people also lived in a society that was more interested in money, and particularly the Egyptian society they were pulled out of, that was a big part of it.
It's just an observation. I recently watched a series on Netflix called The Good Place. I don't know if anyone else has caught it. It's quite amusing. But there was one particular focus which examined whether philosophically it is in fact possible in a modern economy to actually do good, where you're considering the layers of intervening entities that exist between us and our purchases, us and the people who make them. And it just raised the question of, I guess, where we in a modern economy are reliant essentially on a lot of slavery actually built into our purchases, whether it is in fact possible to be good, because it's a different world and we don't have that direct interaction with the people who make what we consume.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was thinking about whether we observe any religious practice that oppresses others, we make an effort for their morning tea coffee is fair trade coffee, but have we checked how many slaves were involved in building the electronics, which is where a huge amount of slavery is involved? How many of you pulled out your mobile phone to read the Bible text this morning, which is children down mines is where the essential minerals for a lot of mobile phones come from. Where is our electricity coming from, and how is that electricity damaging the earth that's relating to people losing their homes in bushfires? We might just be people gathered on a morning to sing songs, but we have an impact beyond the thing that's in front of us most obviously. Yeah.
Thanks, Claire. Had me remembering that I'm old enough to remember when I lived in an actual community in a goldfields town, where Sunday was all sport and church and that sort of stuff. And even our hotel closed, except for the evening session for the shift workers. So that was even the day off for us running the central meeting place of the whole town. And once you move into the seven-day week thing, you break that up. You can see that now. You can't get people to be reliable volunteers for junior football coaching and all those sort of things that people used to do because they're working or they're flying fly out. So what I like getting out of what you were saying is that this is really a matter of making good social science, good public health and good understanding of building a community into such an important thing that God said we have to do it.
Who would imagine that God would be interested in good public health?
When I was a surveying cadet, I used to thought it was funny reading the rules because there were rules for the survey hands and cadets under the AWU award that said We had to have Sunday off to be able to go to the nearest town to worship and to court. But the unions didn't bring that in. The unions didn't bring that in as a religious... Yeah, the unions didn't fight for that rule as a religious thing.
No.
Right.
No. And the basis of our modern weekend is significantly the unions, not the churches. Yeah. Although they were related to each other in some periods, but...